Good afternoon, it's 3 o'clock. You are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on Monday, the 2nd of July of the year 2012. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today, Chris Taylor will be here to highlight art classes in July at the campus. We'll also learn about upcoming sewing classes for kids with the guest Annette Coggins of Raintree Quilting. Ed Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more today on a Juneau afternoon. With the forecast for tonight, mostly cloudy skies with a slight chance of rain later on, low temperatures around 49 degrees, southwest winds to 10 miles per hour. Forecast for Tuesday, mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain and high temperatures around 57 degrees. Looks like the forecast for Independence Day, mostly cloudy with skies with a chance of rain and high temperatures around 60 degrees, with northwest winds to 5 miles per hour.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Construction has stopped on an unfinished museum dedicated to Native Americans in Oklahoma. As KGOU's Kirk Gortney reports, officials with the half-finished project say they don't have the money to keep building.
Workers officially halted their progress on the American Indian Cultural Center and Museum Sunday, but the builders will remain on site to provide security on a month-to-month basis. The project's future came into question in May after the Oklahoma legislature failed to approve a $40 million bond issue that was matched by a similar amount in private donations. Several lawmakers were opposed to the state adding any additional debt, and some were also critical of the increasing costs for the museum. The state is already paying on $63.4 million in bonds for the incomplete project. Museum officials say they need an additional $80 million to finish the center. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gwartney in Norman, Oklahoma.
An anonymous donation could pave the way for a new children's foster home on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbold has more.
A man in Michigan has been learning of the plight of American Indians on Pine Ridge and says he wants to help. The donor, who wants to remain anonymous, has pledged as much money as needed to build a 40-bed home for foster children on the reservation. Officials say children need foster care if they have to spend a night away from their parents. They say it often happens when parents are arrested for DUI when children are in the vehicle. Those involved in the project say the new foster home probably would cost upwards of $1 million. It would temporarily house children up to age 12, since there's already an emergency home to meet the needs of older children. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellen Bolt.
The Bureau of Indian Affairs is providing emergency funds to a women's shelter in Alaska. The BIA announced Friday $50,000 in emergency funding was going to the Imanik Women's Shelter. According to the BIA, the shelter located in the Yupik Village is the only facility offering domestic violence protection and is facing imminent closure due to a funding shortfall. The 34-year-old facility serves families that live in the region, including 13 surrounding rural communities, serving an estimated 500 women and children a year. It's currently operating under a federal grant, and notification of new awards is not expected until the fall. The Imanik Women's Shelter is one of two in Alaska that offers services to Alaska Native people living in rural areas. The other is located in Bethel, several hundred miles away. The Navajo Nation Gaming Enterprise announces a $5 million gaming distribution to the Navajo Nation. The enterprise announced Friday that after 3 years of casino operations, this is the first direct distribution of gaming profits made to the tribe. More than $18 million has been paid to the tribe in the form of interest, taxes, sponsorships, and emergency relief efforts. Now the tribe is receiving a financial return on its gaming investments. The funds can be used for government operations or programs, general welfare, economic development, or charity, and the council has the authority to decide its use. The tribe has three casinos in New Mexico and plans on opening one in Arizona by 2013. The Southwest Tribe is one of the largest in the United States. On this day in 1924, Corporal Mitchell Red Cloud Jr. was born. The Ho-Chunk Winnebago Man received a posthumous Medal of Honor for his bravery during the Korean War. Red Cloud leaned on a tree for support while firing at the enemy, although he was shot numerous times. He managed to save many of his fellow soldiers by warning them of the advancing enemy and continued to fight while his company moved the severely wounded out of the firing line. In 1999, the USNS Red Cloud was launched in his honor off a dock in San Diego, California. There are also monuments, parks, highways, and other ships named in his honor since he was killed in action in November 1950 at the age of 26. Red Cloud was also a Marine veteran of World War II. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:16. You are tuned to KTOO 306. Excuse me. And you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. First guest is Chris Taylor. He's the Artistic Coordinator at the Canvas Community Arts Studio here to talk about July classes and art. Chris, thank you for coming down to the station today.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
So before we get going here, tell us about the Canvas.
Well, the Canvas is a department of REACH for people who are experiencing developmentally delays or disabilities. And the Canvas is part of that organization, and it's just a place for people who either experiencing disabilities or people who aren't to come down and take some great art classes and be part of Juneau's lively art scene.
Seems like there's always something going on at the Canvas.
A very busy spot to be, for sure.
And what's happening in July?
July, we do a lot of kids programming. So we just wrapped up a JDU Arts Camp down there that went on last week. It was a lot of fun. Had a lot of great kids down there. And then the fun kind of continues in July. We have about five classes for kids in particular. Starting July 9th, we have a kids ceramics wear class, and that's going to go for about 2 weeks. They'll be focusing on making mugs and plates and platters, and they'll be learning hand-building techniques and mosaic techniques. And then also starting on July 9th, we will have a decorative papier-mâché mask-making class, so they'll be working with papier-mâché and then decorating the masks with colorful yarn and papers. Kelly Manning, our director, will be teaching that class. And then after that, we will have an animal self-portrait class.
So the schedule, you have to tell me about that.
Well, on the animal self-portrait class.
Yeah.
So I'll be teaching that one. It's actually pretty cool. It's a class and a technique that I learned in grad school. One of my teachers is a pretty well-known illustrator, and he basically teaches you how to merge characteristics of your face with characteristics of animals. So, you know, I could make myself into an elephant or a leopard or something like that. So the kids would be taking their favorite animals or scary animals that they like and merging their faces with those and coming up with a new hybrid, I guess, is the idea for the class. And so it'll focus on, first and foremost, having fun down there, but also just anatomy of the face and how to draw some realistic characteristics of both animals and people.
It sounds like a fun class. What animal is the most popular?
I think I've seen a lot of anteaters and a lot of elephants just because of the elongated nose. It's kind of a fun one to play with, and I'm hoping to see if I can get a couple kids to do a giraffe. I think would be pretty cool, too, so.
I guess I qualify for the anteater's nose myself.
I'm in the same ballpark. That or a rhinoceros, I could probably go for it too myself. So
cool.
Yeah.
Other classes?
What was that?
Other classes coming up?
Yeah, other classes coming up. We have a sort of the animal self-portrait. That one's July 16th through the 20th. And then following that up, we have a Magic Realist Kids Writing Workshop. Again, Kelly Manning is going to be teaching that one, and that starts July 24th through the 26th. It's a three-day thing, and they'll be studying Magic Realist Writing, which is pretty cool writing technique. There's been some great writers in the past. Gabriel Garcia Marquez is probably one of the most notable, and Kelly's a big fan of his, and so she'll be talking about that technique and get the kids kind of making up their own stories and putting in bits and pieces of magic to make that story a little more unique and kind of fun.
Seems like you get a lot of members out there at the community doing classes as well.
What was that?
A lot of people throughout the community doing classes.
Oh, for sure, yeah. We try to get as many of the artists in Juneau to come in and join us down at the Canvas. So. And then some of the other classes coming up, and that kind of wraps up most of our kids' classes. But we also have an advanced pottery workshop, and that's going to be starting July 15th through the 29th. And then we also have a great artist, Avril Veliz, which I'm sure you're probably familiar with her, but she's going to be doing another kids' class that's going to start July 14th through the 28th called Heroes and Villains. And the idea of that class is going to be predominantly collage and drawing-based, but the kids will be coming up with their own sets of villains and heroes, their own characters, and then creating a world or a scenery in which they interact, their stories, their characters interact in. So that should be a pretty fun class. And then she'll also be teaching an adults class called Advanced Drawing. And that class will focus on two-point perspective, three-point perspective, how to lay out shadows, and how to get some advanced drawing techniques and creating spaces that might be otherwise hard to do from observation. There's a great picture on our website that she did of an old clock shop seen from above during the daytime.
She's going to show at the Jindrugla City Museum as well.
Yeah, she is, and she just recently showed a few months back at the State Museum, and that show actually, portion of it just went up at the State Library. So if anyone missed that at the State Museum, it's also at the State Library right now, and definitely worth stopping in and checking out her stuff. And then, let's see, any other classes coming up that I missed? And I think that's about it on the classes that we have it coming up. Right now, we do have a collaboration show that we showed last month. It will be a continuation of showing that for the First Friday event. We are in the progress of trying to line up some ceramic artists that create work in our ceramic studio to show some of their pieces and sell some of their pieces. It's not finalized yet, so it would be worth everyone kind of keeping their eye out on the canvas when they walk by to see if we have those out. Great chance to get some ceramic ware for a pretty good deal. And then coming up in August, we do have Fumi Matsumoto is going to be doing a show there called A Bird in the Hand. I have yet to see what the pieces are going to be, but she's a fantastic mixed media artist, and we're looking forward to that. And then just some other things to kind of keep your eyes open for on our website. We have Art Johnson's going to be teaching a form line class in August, which should be nice to have. And we also will be having David Woody, a local figurative artist, is going to be teaching a figure drawing class, and followed up by a figure painting class in September. So.
And you've been getting people ready for the 4th of July parade as well, with people from Discovery Southeast as well.
Yeah, we've been working with them. They've a great group, been coming in on Saturdays and working on all sorts of costumes, from beavers to jellyfish to mushrooms, and they're going to get these costumes on and be part of the parade. So.
The Parade of Species.
Yes, exactly, the Parade of Species.
All right, Chris Taylor, thank you very much for coming down to the station today. Chris Taylor, Artistic Coordinator at the Canvas Community Art Studio. People need to sign up, or if they're interested in teaching classes, what's the phone number that they can contact?
It's going to be 786-1750, and they can also jump on our website. It's www.canvasarts.org.
And Chris, thank you for being on the show with us today.
Thank you, Jeff.
for Fish Fest 2012 at the Twisted Fish the night of July 3rd. Watch the fireworks from the best spot in Juneau with a cold beverage in your hand.
We'll have live bluegrass music from the Sean McColl Trio. And then...
The File Jerks featuring Shorthand and Astronomar.
All door proceeds go to KXLL.
It's the party of the summer. Everyone there is
a true American.
And here is the writer's almanac for Monday. It's the 2nd of July, 2012. It was 75 years ago today, 1937. Amelia Earhart was last heard from somewhere over the Pacific. She and her navigator, Fred Noonan, had set off in May from Miami to fly around the world in a Lockheed Electra. They'd completed all but about 7,000 miles of the trip, landed in New Guinea. There were U.S. Coast Guard ships in place to help guide them to their next stop, the tiny Howland Island. Weather cloudy, rainy when they left New Guinea. Earhart communicated to the Coast Guard cutter Itasca, "We must be on you, but we cannot see you. Fuel is running low. Been unable to reach you by radio. We're flying at 1,000 feet." Her last transmission about an hour later was, "We are running north and south." The government sent 9 ships, 66 aircraft to search for the downed plane. And this month, 75 years later, a new search team will use robotic submarines to comb the area where they think the Electra went down. It's the birthday of Hermann Hesse, born in Calf, Germany, 1877. When he was in his 30s, he started studying Eastern religions, took a trip to India, and wrote his novel Siddhartha about the early life of the Gautama Buddha. Hermann Hesse, who said, "The world is not imperfect or slowly evolving along a path to perfection. No, it is perfect at every moment. Every sin already carries grace in it." It's the birthday of singer-songwriter Greg Brown, born in Fairfield, Iowa, 1949. His father was a Pentecostal preacher, his mother an English teacher who played electric guitar. Greg Brown, who's recorded 24 albums, including Songs of Innocence and Experience, poems by William Blake set to music. It was 50 years ago today, 1962, the first Walmart store opened for business in Rogers, Arkansas. It's called Walmart Discount City. Sam Walton hired as few employees as he could, paid them as little as he could, and tried to keep unions out. He said it was his way of making sure that his working-class consumers could get goods at a reasonable price. Put his first stores in rural areas to avoid competition with Kmart and Sears, and Walmart is now the world's largest corporation, its annual revenues higher than Switzerland's gross national product. Here's a poem for today by Archibald MacLeish, New England Weather. Hay time, when the Boston forecast calls for haying weather hot and fair. Conway people stick to garden chores and nod toward nightfall at the cemetery. That's where Sumner Boyden's lying now. And Sumner always told the town, if Boston promised shine, you'd better count on showers long toward evening with your hay crop lost. He meant, no man can tell the weather anywhere but where he's from. You have to have the whole of it together, bred in your bones, the way the wind shifts come, how dust feels on a hay fork handle, days when there'll be thunder up for sure, and how the swallows skim the cattle stand, when blue stays blue and even clover cures. He knew the Conway signs, and when the Boston forecast didn't, team went back to stalls, and chances were by 4:30 at most, we'd hear the thunder up toward Shelburne Falls. It wasn't luck. New England weather breeds New Englanders. That changing sky is part of being born and drawing breaths and dying, maybe, where you're meant to die. New England Weather by Archibald MacLeish from his collected poems, published by Houghton Mifflin and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Produced by Kathy Roach, written by Holly Vander Aar. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
A reminder to Capital Transit and Caravan passengers, buses and vans will not be operating on Wednesday, July 4th, in recognition of the Independence Day holiday. Full service will resume on Thursday, July 5th. For more information, call Capital Transit at 789-6901 or Caravan at 463-6194. The drivers and staff at Capital Transit and Caravan would like to wish everyone a happy and safe Independence Day.
Time is 3:21 and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Something from the February My Dreams presentation.
Last but not least, Miss Amanda Kraft was born and raised in Alaska and has lived in Talkeetna, Eagle River, and Juneau. She has a twin sister, Leah, and yes, they do read each other's minds. Amanda's a JDHS 10-year, oh no, Amanda's JDHS 10-year high school reunion is this summer, and she's both excited and unsure of how time passed so quickly. 10 years of high school. I wish it was my 10-year reunion. After living those 10 years since high school in Portland and Los Angeles, Amanda has happily moved back to Juneau and is working at Harborview Elementary School. Please welcome to the stage Amanda Kraft.
Ooh. Hello. I didn't think it was possible to sweat through a leather jacket, but I think I might have just done it. This story takes place when I was 10 years old on a fly-out caribou hunting trip with my father. And my dad was a pilot by hobby, so we always had a float plane of some sort, so we had a Super Cub, and we lived on a lake, so it was easy to park it out front. And there were three distinct things that I remember about this trip. One was that my dad bought me a pound of gummy bears, and I was allowed to eat them as soon as we set up camp, and my twin sister did not go on this trip, and she could not have those gummy bears. Two, no one actually explained what would happen after we got a caribou. I didn't really know what happened after, and I have a very vivid, seared image in my brain of cutting an animal from top to bottom and having the insides become the outsides. And I was wondering why I ate all of those gummy bears at that moment. But I did not barf, and my father said he was very proud of me, so that means a lot. But the one thing that I really remember was the flight home. So we loaded up our gear, we had our caribou, and we headed home, and this was in the summertime in Eagle River outside of Anchorage, and so usually it's pretty light out at that point. But the weather was not that great as we got closer to home. Very dark, and the wind was picking up tremendously. And my adult brain, when I look back on this story now, I realize a lot of red flags. But as a 10-year-old, I had no idea what was really going on. And the first one being, my dad wanted to land at a neighboring lake, which we did, about 10 miles away, because he wanted to check the weather. But this was before cell phones, and so we tied the plane to a tree, because this is not where we lived, like a dog, and went and knocked on doors till someone let us in so we could call our neighbor on the lake that we lived on to check the weather. And after a brief conversation, we decided to go. We said, all right, load up, let's go. Let's go home. So once we got airborne, I think he and I realized that that might have not been the best idea at that moment. Looking back now, at the time I was completely oblivious. But he said he wanted to circle the lake a few times before we landed. And now we've flown in this plane what seemed like hundreds of times. We have never done this. So now my adult brain realizes we were probably burning off fuel. And my kid brain was like, okay, whatever, that sounds fine. And at that point, the plane was shaking pretty violently. So turbulence up and down. And then also, if you've ever ridden in a Super Cub airplane, shaking, actually, a whole plane shaking. And you have to wear, you know, the big earphones with the microphone to talk to one another. And the plane at that point also was doing a lot of listing side to side. And when we finally decided we were going to make our approach up to land on the lake, that was when I think the real panic hit. Because the command from my father at that point was, put your life jacket on. Why? I didn't really know why we were doing that. And then followed by the question, do you remember how to open the airplane door if you need to get out? And then it was waterworks. Like the moment I think I've ever cried the most in my entire life. And in the Super Cub airplane, my dad was sitting in front and I was sitting in back. So he had really no idea of what was happening. But I was full on, snot-nosed, wailing. I mean, I'm sure he heard me on the microphone, but I think he was a little bit preoccupied with what was going on. So when we finally decided to land, I just remember the plane almost, it was listing so hard from side to side that you could, it felt like I could reach out and touch the tips of the trees. We were that close to the trees. And we come in and we land pretty hard. Boom, 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 boom. And then all of a sudden we're taxiing like any other flight that we've gone out on. And I'm still sobbing, still sobbing, still sobbing. We pull into our dock. I get out. And my dad says, why are you crying? Why are you crying? And I lit my life vest that I had on was soaking wet. I mean, we're talking like the hardest I've ever cried. And he said, we were fine. What did you think was going to happen? And I said, I thought we were going to die. Ugh. And he's like, no, we were fine. Everything was fine. So this was the other flag. He said, don't worry about unloading the plane. He would never say that, by the way. We always unloaded our gear and put our gear away. And this is probably close to midnight at this point. And he said, I'll just get the meat. We'll put it in the garage. Why don't you go hop in the truck and we're going to go to 7-Eleven? Okay. Immediately, I was reassured. Like, tears dried up. 7-Eleven. All right. So I go get in the truck. We drive to 7-Eleven. And my dad seems to sort of have like this extra spring in his step, like going into 7-Eleven, almost like a jog. And he goes, you can get whatever you want. You pick out whatever you want. And I thought, yeah, like this is the best trip ever. I got gummy bears. Leah, my sister, is not on this trip. I get to do whatever I want. Now we're going to 7-Eleven. And so I picked out a big red soda. I don't know if any of you have ever had that, but it's like 1,000 packs of gum in liquid form. And I was never allowed to have that. And so I went up, and that was my one thing. And I remember sitting on the curb outside of the Eagle River 7-Eleven at midnight and drinking my Big Red, thinking this is the most amazing thing ever. And I look over at my dad, and he has blown through an entire pack of cigarettes. Go, 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 go. Other, like working on like pack two. Boom, boom, boom. And I just kind of was like, well, that's a little bit strange. And strangely, we never talked about this entire incident ever again until about 15 years later. I had actually forgotten all about it because I thought everything was fine, right? He had said everything was fine, so everything was fine. And 15 years later, I was having some sort of like early 20s crazy melodrama situation, I'm sure, that involved a job or a boy or moving or like all of the above. And my dad was trying to give me fatherly advice, which was great. And he was talking about not having regrets and the usual kind of spiel, and which was really sweet. And he said, you know, I don't really have any regrets at all ever, except that one time. I do have one. When we flew back from that hunting trip, and I went, what? Because I had thought everything was fine. I mean, I knew things were not fine, but, and I started crying on the phone. And it was so sweet. And not really crying because I was sad, but crying because in that moment of like the most terrified I'd ever been, and the most terrified I've ever been to this day. I mean, a plane crash? I mean, come on. It's pretty scary, especially for a 10-year-old. He was able to totally remove any emotion from that situation and solely comfort me, even though clearly by the cigarette smoking, he was really stressed and probably really afraid. And now he was admitting these things. And it was so sweet for him to say them and also like to have comforted me in that way. And I think about it now and it does make me tear up a little bit. But so when I thought about the story I was going to tell and the theme was for the love of it, it really came down to for the love of him. So thank you.
That's Amanda Kraft, recorded live in the February Mudrooms presentation. A big thanks to Amanda and Mark Wheeler for making sure those tapes are available for us to play on a Juno afternoon. In the studio with us now is Annette Coggins from Ranger Cooling, here to talk about the August sewing classes for kids. Annette, thank you very much for being on the station today.
Thanks, Jeff. It's a pleasure to be here.
So first of all, tell me a little bit about Raintree Quilting.
Well, Raintree started out as a kind of a traditional quilt store. The previous owner had it for 12 years, and I bought it 5 years ago. And I've really tried to expand the store a little bit to appeal to all types of sewers. So I think sometimes people who aren't familiar with our shop think we're just a quilt store, and maybe that they're not a quilter, but we really try to offer classes and inspiration for all types of sewers, whether you're a garment sewer or a craft sewer or a quilter.
What made you want to buy the business in the first place?
Well, I've been sewing since I was a child, and I started quilting probably about 30 years ago, and I love fabric. I could sit and play with it all day. I love the looks of it. I love the color. I love putting it together, and I used to, before Raintree opened by the previous owners, when I first moved here, I thought, Juno really needs a good quilt store. And then they opened one, and I was doing some other things. And then years later, they were ready to sell the shop, and I was at a place where my life had changed, and I was in a place where I could have a retail business. So I went into it. But I had thought about it for a long time, you know, I really like playing with fabric, and I like seeing people get inspired and be creative. That's the fun part of it.
How many serious sewers are out there in Juno?
Oh, there's lots. I have no idea. There's lots of quilters. There's lots of sewers. There's people who collect fabric. You know, I think our weather is conducive to being inside and doing all kinds of crafts, so people come in and sew, and I get people in the middle of winter and rainy days who just want to come in for a little color therapy and walk around the store and look at all the bright colors and feel the fabric and be inspired to go create something. And I think this weather, it's kind of a good outlet for lack of bright colors outside.
Is sewing meditative for you, people?
Oh, definitely. I think playing with fabric and fibers as well as creating something is just, I had stressful jobs for years and would come home and go in my studio and cut up beautiful fabrics and sew them back together. And there's something about creating something useful with your own hands that I think is really inspirational.
Tell me about sewing machine basics. The very basic, what does a sewing machine do?
Well, the very basics is, you know, for years we sewed with a needle and a thread, and we had to take it up and down through the fabric. And when they created a sewing machine, suddenly you have a needle going up and down, and you have to figure out a way to, you know, fix it into the fabric. So sewing machines have been around a long time, but we've gone from treadle to electric and now to computerized machines. And with computers, it's amazing what you can do with sewing machines. We have both manual machines and computerized machines. We have machines that do very basic things, and we have machines that you can actually go into software and design things you want to sew and have a machine embroidery module sew them out for you. So whether you're machine embroidering or you want to paint a picture with thread. You can design it in software and have a machine sew it out on fabric for you.
How have sewing machines changed over the years as far as expense goes?
We sell Bernina sewing machines, which are very high quality Swiss-made machine. And what's happened with computers is I probably got my first Bernina about 15 years ago and maybe paid $3,000 for it at the time. And it was a very top-of-line machine, or several down from the top-of-line. Now with computers, you can buy a machine for the same amount that does 10 times more. It's just like getting our first laptop or our first computer compared to now. When they come out, for the same amount of money, they do 10 times more, or your cell phone or anything that's computer chip-based. The cost doesn't go up that much or change. It's just that they do a lot more when they come out with new additions.
I've always wanted to take up fabric and work, but I haven't had the time to do it. I wanted to make self-sculpture things.
Yeah.
So as far as creativity goes, is the volume of number of things increased?
Oh, yeah. People sew on metal. They sew on mixed fibers. I had a young woman in shopping for a sewing machine the other day that wanted to sew lichens and moss down on fabric, and so she brought some in to see how the machines would do. So, especially, I mean, any of us who have gone to Wearable Arts see all the things that people make up there. So people sew all kinds of things together, aluminum cans, you name it. People are mixing medias and sewing them down. And
Ned Coggins is here to talk about some classes which are going on for kids coming up in August. Do you want to describe the classes and who they're for?
Sure. We have what we call kids sewing camps, and our first camp, we start with teaching the kids how to use a sewing machine. We provide machines for the kids to use, so they just need a few sewing supplies and their fabric. We give them a supply list, and then we provide the machine. So first we kind of do machine basics and how to use a sewing machine, and then they start learning how to read the patterns and how to cut out their fabric, lay out their fabric. The first camp is 2 days, and they make a series of pillows. So they kind of leave there with a pillowcase and 3 or 4 pillows that they've made for their rooms. And each pillow has a different set of skills. Like they might start with squares and go to circles and piecing different pieces of fabrics together. And so they learn different sewing skills as they're progressing through the task. So the first camp, Camp 1, they do a series of pillows. Then Camp 2, you have to have taken Camp 1 to join Camp 2. So kids who are out there who maybe have taken our first camp before can come into Camp 2, or you can take them right in a row. And in Camp 2, they start into garment sewing, and they learn to take their measurements and fit the pattern to fit their size, and they make pajama pants. And then we're also doing a Camp 3, which is going to be footed pajamas. So they'll be a full, they'll have feet and a zipper down the front. And so each of those are designed to learn different skills. The teacher who teaches these is a life skills or home ec teacher. She has years of experience teaching kids and teaching sewing. The kids really love the camps. A lot of times kids come in and they just sign up for Camp 1 and think they'll wait and see how they like it. And a couple hours into the first camp, they're all, can I come to Camp 2? Can I come to Camp 3? So they have a great time, and they leave having made little things out of every scrap they brought with them. So
is sewing difficult to learn?
No, it's not a difficult thing to learn. It's just that, there's several basic, things as you go. And that's the nice thing about taking a camp, is that we're going to teach them how to read the pattern and how to do things. And a lot of times people who try to teach themselves how to sew, they pick up some patterns that assume you have some basic information. And then they either pick up some bad habits or skip some steps. And then they get frustrated because things don't go together well. So it's really nice when you take a class and you learn how to do it right from the beginning, then, you know, you start out and learn the basic skills, then you can go off and sew moss to fabric or whatever you want to do. But, you know, learn how to read a pattern and how to use a machine and those basic things first.
So we're talking about the August classes now, because last time I wanted to talk to Annette, the classes had filled up already.
Yeah, so we've just started the sign up for these. Camp 1 is August 6th and 7th, so it's a two-day class. The fee is $100, and we provide the machines and snacks and the pattern. And then Camp 2 is on the 8th and 9th of August, the 2 days following. And the camps go from 9 in the morning till 5 o'clock. The kids bring a bag lunch, and we take a little lunch break. And then our Camp 3 is the following week on August 13th and 14th.
And where are you located?
We're located at 2213 Dunn Street, which is across from AT&T and Frontier Suites, out off the old Glacier Highway, kind of out near where Valley Paint used to be located, kind of close to there.
All right. Annette Coggins from Marine 2 Quilting. Anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
Sign up your kids. They love it. It's a great skill to learn when you're young. And what I find is that there's a lot of people my generation or a little younger that never learned to sew as kids, and so they don't know how to teach them how to sew. So let them come and learn whether you know how to or not.
You have a website?
Yeah, raintreequilting.com.
And Annette, thank you for coming down and educating us about sewing machine basics and the classes coming up in August.
Thanks, Jeff.
Now, the magic words. Salagadoola, mentrikaboola, bibbidi-bobbidi-boo. Put them together, and what have you got? Bibbidi-bobbidi-boo. Salagadoola, mentrikaboola, bibbidi-bobbidi-boo. It'll do magic, believe it or not. Bibbidi-bobbidi-boo. Now, salagadoola means a mentrikaboola-roo. But the thingamabob that does the job is bibbidi-bobbidi-boo.
Oh, salagadoola, mentrikaboola, bibbidi-bobbidi-boo. Put them together and what have you got?
Now, with an elegant coach like that, of course, we'll simply have to have, mice.
Mice?
Oh, this really is nice. Why, we'll have a coach and four when we're through. Just a wave of my stick and to finish the trick. Bibbidi, bobbidi, boo. Gracious, what did I do? I was sure there were four. There should be one more. Oh, there you are.
This is Bird Note. When thousands upon thousands of birds migrated through here in spring, many were on their way to the boreal forest of the north to breed, then feed their young. Let's follow them to this vast band of spruce and poplar that extends from coast to coast across Alaska and Canada. Come with me to North America's songbird breadbasket, where for a brief time it teems with song. Ah, there's the fluty harmonics of the Swainson's thrush. The long, clear whistles of the white-throated sparrow. Ornithologist Roger Torrey Peterson described these whistles as, "Oh, sweet Canada." And the eerie wailing of the common loon. What about this sound? Yes, That's what many birds feed upon in the boreal forest, a land of abundant insects and rich sounds. The sounds of the birds featured on Bird Note come from the Macaulay Library at the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. I'm Frank Corrado.
This July 26th through the 29th, prepare yourself for a fair like there's no tomorrow.
The Southeast Alaska State Fair has events for the entire family. Don't miss new activities like the Zombie Adventure Run. There's a wearable art fashion show debuting Saturday night, and all your fair favorites. The Haynes Hustle, logging show, Fisherman's Rodeo, music contests, and more.
Fair like there's no tomorrow.
July 26th through 29th at the Southeast Alaska State Fair.
If you had your say, what would you put in your neighborhood?
Most importantly, they needed some type of activity center down here.
Maybe they should open up an arcade. That way maybe I could play a game or two while I wait for the bus.
Restaurant.
an attempt to put more democracy in neighborhood development. That story as NPR's Cities Project begins later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Tonight on 360 North at 7 p.m., get news from around the country and the world from the BBC World News and weather across the state on Alaska Weather at 7:30. Then at 8, Science for Alaska brings you the Volcano Detectives, locating, predicting, and avoiding ash clouds with Peter Webley from the University of Alaska Fairbanks. That's followed at 9 by The Heart of the Matter, examining America's number one birth defect, congenital heart disease. All this and more tonight on 360 North.
We heard from Nicole Edwards a minute ago. She'll be appearing at the Southeast Alaska State Fair July 26th through the 29th. Here's a little bit of music from Eric McFadden.
For the benefit of Mr. Kite, there will be a show tonight on trampoline.
And he'll be performing Friday night during the Southeast Alaska State Fair in Haines, July 26th through the 29th.
Thank you.
356, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Ock Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Switzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT serves Huna at 91.9. An excursion inlet in Icy Strait here, KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. KRNN can be heard at digital channel 872, and KXLL can be found at 873. We're also online at www.ktoo.org. Tomorrow at 3 o'clock on a Juneau afternoon, we'll learn about Juneau's water quality with Jim Heelan from the CBJ. Find out about the new e-resources at your public library with guest Jonas Lamb. And Grossman from the Forest Service will fill us in about public use cabins. At Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music, and More tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon. If you'd like to be on a Juneau afternoon or know someone that should be, please give us a call at 586-1670 or 463-6425. Weather forecast for tonight, mostly cloudy skies with a few sprinkles in the early evening. Low temperatures around 46 degrees. Forecast for Tuesday, mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain and high temperatures around 60 degrees. Tuesday night, increasing clouds with a chance of rain, low temperatures around 49 degrees. Independence Day, partly cloudy skies with a chance of rain and high temperatures around 60 degrees. Coming up next is All Things Considered. Thank you for tuning in to a Juneau afternoon today.
Hi, I'm Linda Rosenthal. After many years as a classical violinist, I don't need incentives to make me practice, but I do appreciate the incentives the CBJ gives us to make sure all of us are safe, like using a bear-resistant enclosure for garbage, one that can't be opened by stomping, kicking, or running into it. The incentive? It's the law. And a first-time offense is a $50 fine. So don't fiddle around. Find more incentives and information at juno.org/bears today.
I feel like there's more and more tools to reach out across the world, but it's still hard to reach out to your entire neighborhood.
This tool is called Neighborland, a website designed to democratize urban development.
Today is Monday, July 2nd, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News.
I'm Melissa.